I've been in work long enough. I've had jobs for over 20 years to learn that you can easily create a job or a business that you hate.
Welcome to Small Business BS, the podcast designed to ignite your entrepreneurial spirit through thought-provoking ideas and actionable business strategies. Each week, entrepreneurs Adam Whitmer and Jeff Gargis dive into creative marketing hacks, proven sales methods, and clever growth strategies. Get ready to unlock the full potential of your business with insights that are both fun and impactful. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Gargis and Adam Whitmer.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Small Business BS podcast. I'm Adam Whitmer, and I'm here with my co-host, Jeff Gargis. In today's episode, we're going to talk about when to go full-time with your side hustle. So, what is a side hustle, Jeff? A side hustle for me is when you have a full-time job and you're trying to build a business on the side to make extra money or to escape the 9-to-5 eventually. It's basically a side job that you are doing on your own rather than having a second job. So is that how you would describe a side hustle, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. Yeah, I mean, theoretically, I guess a side hustle could absolutely just be a second job. But
it could be.
In our context, that's not what we're talking about. I think when most people think of side hustles, they think of the thing they're doing on the side to either, again, hustle, like you said, to make some extra money or hustle to not work where they're working right now or hustle to build something that they just really have the passion about building and want to create too, right? So I think there's a lot of different reasons. You might actually enjoy your 9-to-5, but just have this thing that you, whether you call it a dream or a passion or whatever, that you are driven to do, and that's what you side hustle to. So I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But yeah, it's the thing you do all the other hours that you're not at your normal job, right?
Like, right. That's not relaxation.
Quote unquote side family, hustle that you work 80 hours a week on, right?
Yes. And that's very, very true. And sometimes that's just a hobby. But for those of us who want to earn more money, we want to turn sometimes we want to turn a hobby into money. And so, Yeah. So Jeff, a lot of people, you know, I think we're in a culture of side hustle. I think we're in a side hustle culture where many people have realized that in order to get ahead, you can't have a 2-income family. You have to have a 3 or 4-income family. And a lot of people don't want to have 2 jobs each. It's too hard to manage showing up at particular times. So people want to have a little bit of joy in their second job. So maybe it's just mowing lawns. People like, you know, if I like to mow lawns, hey, I'll just mow a few more lawns each week. And that's my side hustle to bring in more money for my family and more money for vacations or education, whatever it is. But we're in this culture of a side hustle. And I think most families probably have a side hustle between the, you know, in the household, whether it's a single family, single income person, whether it's just a single parent, a single individual, or it's a couple. And, you know, I think that there are most households have second incomes in one way or another. For those that do, I think there's a lot of times there's a thought that, hey, it would be nice to do this full time. It would be nice to pursue my side hustle, whatever it is, full time. For a lot of people, the side hustle is a joy. They're trying to find a way to make money, whether it's baking and selling food at a farmer's market every Saturday, is working 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, but baking Thursday and Friday nights to sell at the farmer's market on Saturday. Or maybe it's mowing lawns, or maybe it's building an internet business like you and I did. And so, you know, I think a lot of people like the idea of going full time in their business, but they're not sure how to do that. And they definitely don't know when the right time is to make the jump. So I think in this episode, let's talk about when to go full time in your side hustle. So what are some considerations, Jeff, that we should be thinking through? If we go back to the days of, you know, people who are working a full time job, working in a side hustle, creating this thing on the side, what are some considerations that people should think through on how to go full-time and when to go full-time and what makes sense to make that leap from working a day job to having a side hustle?
Yeah, so I love this topic. And I said before we hit record that I love this because you and I took very different roads to this. So that's fun. But I did look really quick, side note, The AI overview on Google tells me that approximately 36% of all U.S. adults have a side hustle. So, like, it's a nice chunk. Considerations, I think there's a lot of them, but I think the ones that come to mind for me are you need to at least have a somewhat proven, I'd say you should have a proven offer, whatever it is that whether your offer is mowing lawns or baking or selling courses online or coaching or doing web design or whatever it is, you need to have proven to yourself to some extent that, hey, when I do this, I can do this, I can create it, and people will pay me for it, right? Now, that's the minimum in my opinion, right? It's got to be that. And you need to at least enjoy it to an extent, and you need to be able to actually see that you can make money from it. I think from there, the considerations need to be then, okay, well, how much money do I need in order to replace my current income, right? And now, side note, in some instances, you might not need to fully replace your current income, right? Like, so maybe you're part of a couple or partnership, and you don't need to actually fully replace yours. You just need to replace 25% of it or 50% of it. But whatever it is, you need to figure out how much money do I actually need to be able to make in order to step away from this job and not hurt me or my family financially, right? And that's going to vary based on, again, your situation. And then there's a little bit in there, and this is where Adam and I might be different, or at least we have been different in the way we've approached it in our own personal journeys, is that the timing might be, well, I need to get to that point first and then I can make this jump, or the time might be, I need to get to a point where that I know if I take this extra 40 hours and put into it, I'm going to get to that point because I've proven it, right? And so part of that's going to come into like, what's your risk tolerance, right? What kind of savings do you have set up? Do you have a safety net just in case it does take a little bit longer or it takes a dip? So those are things I think you need to take in consideration when you think about those numbers. Another piece, Adam, that I think a lot of people do not think about, specifically if you are in the United States, is insurance and retirement. Because when you go in on your own, if you had insurance through your employer and or retirement savings through your employer, that goes away. And it's going to look differently. Most likely, if you go into the marketplace for insurance, it's going to be more because you're not getting the discount that most employers get. If you go into savings, you might lose the match if you had like a match, you know, for 401k or whatever it might be. So that I see a lot of people who don't like, they don't take that in consideration. I'm like, oh, like, yeah, okay, that's great. You were making enough to replace your salary, but you just lost your insurance. And now you got an extra $1,300 a month coming out for that. And you're no longer savings for your retirement stuff. Now you may say, that's fine, I don't care. Like, that's fine too. But like, you need to be considering these things, and this is going to help you build up the list of like, okay, where am I at? How am I doing? And I think another piece that I'm going to let you say some things, Adam, is a consideration when it comes to money as well is the revenue I'm seeing consistent? And do I see a path for it to remain consistent versus did I have a really good launch or did I just have a good season? Did I catch a really big client that's not like my other clients. And if I lose this one, I'm going to lose 60% of my business. So like thinking through that, because a lot of times what will happen is you'll see someone side hustle and they're grinding and they're busting it and they're having some success. And then they get like a unique deal, or they just have like a really good month and they're like, all right, I'm out of here. But there's no track record to show that they're going to continue doing that month, right? So if you've been doing it for 3 years or 2 years or 1 year, or whatever, and you have like a 1 month where you just like kill it, you need another month or two to show that you can do that. So I think these are all considerations. Now, all of that goes with Adam, the asterisk of if your answer is no to any of those things, like you can still jump if you want to, if you're crazy like Jeff, and that's okay. But like that's my, for me, those are the important considerations. And some of those, Adam, I'm looking back going, those are considerations that I did not take into account when I first jumped the first time ever. So I think that's where I've kind of learned from that. But Adam, I know we were talking beforehand. We talked about this a lot, about how, you know, I dove into a lot of stuff. You were with your business that you know, that I've known you with, your compliance cohort, like you were very strategic and very calculated in the way that you approached your going full time. And we were in a mastermind together where we were all like, dude, you should have been full time a year ago, and you were patient and calculated. So I'd love to hear like your The considerations that I mentioned, were those the things that were in your mind, or what did I not mention that you were thinking about? Because I really think like you took a great approach to it because you were in a great spot. You didn't hate your job. You enjoyed it, but you had this other thing that you were growing, that you loved, that you were good at, that was showing a lot of success. And you were like, oh, like you were in this position where like you took your time doing it so that when you did it, like it was almost like nothing changed. It was such a seamless thing for you, at least from my viewpoint, obviously a little different for you, I'm sure. So I'd love to hear where the considerations that you were really thinking through before you took that jump.
Yeah, no, that's great, Jeff. I love everything that you said. You know, to first answer your question, you know, the considerations that I looked at in order to take the jump, you know, one of the biggest things for me was sustainability. That's something I kind of want to bring up in our last episode, but I didn't. You know, one of the things in our mindset as an entrepreneur that we have to have is being able to sustain whatever it is we're going into. And I don't know how to explain this other than, you know, my family has musicians. My wife was a musician. When she was 15 years old, she was courted by a record label and flown to Vancouver and made some EPs with a really well-known producer. I always thought I wanted to be in a band and travel. And my daughter is now a musician and thinking about that. But, you know, over the years, I started to understand, like, what would it really mean to be a musician? A full-time, famous, traveling artist that's in a band, or my daughter may be a pop singer, whatever the case is, what would that really look like? Well, that would look like being on the road 300 days a year. That would look like living out of a van and driving, you know, 6 hours every night and lugging equipment in and lugging equipment out and not being home and not being consistent. And my personality doesn't fit that. I would hate that. And I don't know why I ever thought I wanted to be a musician, because I don't like moving stuff and setting stuff up. I like to get a studio permanent. I mean, I like things that are permanent, they're done, and it's fixed. And so for me, I don't think I would ever want to be a musician. My wife realized she didn't want to do that lifestyle. And so in business, it's the same thing. And for me, I wanted to make sure that I was comfortable doing what the core elements of my business are, which are creating training videos. I liked it at first, but I didn't know if this was something long-term. I've been in work long enough. I've had jobs for over 20 years to learn that you can easily create a job or a business that you hate. If you say yes to everything, and you're saying yes to stuff that you don't like, you're going to hate your job. You're going to hate your life if you're not careful within a couple of months or a couple of years. And so for my business, I was really careful to try to say no to the things I don't like. There are things in my industry I don't like that I don't do. It's funny. My industry does live webinars. I hate live webinars. I don't know why. I get stressed out. I can record pre-recorded videos all day long. I have no problem with it. In fact, I love it and I thrive on it. But doing it live, it just stresses me out. And I do some. I've been doing these for 10, 15 years. And so it's you know, I do some of those, and I may pivot to more of those because if there's a demand. But I've been very careful on the ones I say yes to not complicate my business in a way that I don't like. So for me, that was one of the biggest considerations, was sustainability. Is this something I can do long-term? Is this something I could do over and over again and not hate myself and not get burned out? Because if I do hate it and I do get burned out, I'm not going to deliver the product and I'm not going to be able to sell it. And it's just, I might as well work for somebody else. And then I can clock out at 5 o'clock and not worry about it till Monday, you know, and in a business, that's not the case. You work 7 days a week. So that's the first thing that came to mind, and I'll let you respond to that. And I will respond back to what you said too. I've got a few more thoughts.
That's such an important one. And I think it goes on to like sustainable money financially, but I love that you actually didn't go that route. You went like, can I sustain it? Can I do this? Cause to your point, otherwise you're just creating another job that you don't like with a whole lot more responsibility and pressure and stress, cause it's always on. Right. And so that is key, man. Cause like, again, you can have you start this thing and you have a 3, 4, 5 month, 6 month, and it's working really well. And you're like, oh, this is awesome. I'm just going to do this. But if you don't actually love the work, yeah. Oh, no, you keep going. Go ahead and respond to the rest of it. I just wanted to chime in that I just love that.
Well, I appreciate that. So you said earlier, Jeff, that you need to have a proven offer. To me, that's one of my, you know, main things. I think, you know, sustainability of ourselves to be able to do that over and over is number one. But number two is you have to have that proven offer. You know, you mentioned that you have to be able to make money at something. And I've been to farmers markets, and I see people out there at a farmers market selling knitting because they love knitting. So they're selling these things that they've made while they're knitting, and you look at the cost, and then you ask them how much time they spent on it, and they've literally made $2 an hour if they sell it for what they want, if they actually sell it. And so, you know, there are certain hobbies that we have. Maybe you like knitting. Maybe you like doing something like the flying kites. The problem is, how do you turn that into a sustainable offer? And so if you're not going to be able to make money at it, it's very difficult to turn that into a full-time hustle. And so if you are into knitting or flying kites, you have to think about, how could I actually sell this? And is there a proven method of doing it? Now, in knitting, I've heard some people have made bank selling patterns. Patterns are the way that you can scale. You create a great pattern. If you're a great designer, you create this pattern and sell it many times over. So you're selling on scale instead of selling your time for money. But actually knitting something out, it's going to be very difficult to make money at it. So that proven offer is so important. And I think a lot of times we have a tendency as entrepreneurs to want to, you know, reinvent the wheel and to create something brand new. But if we can look and see an industry that's already doing something, see how that industry is being done, and maybe put a slight innovation on it or do it a little bit better than the local market, that's where the proven offer is going to be very easy to determine and go for. So that's number two. Can I cut in
just because I want to play off that one? So because I think there's an opposite side to that of the proven offer, because what I've seen a lot of is people who see the things that work, they see the models that work, and they see how well they might be working for certain people, and they go, "Oh, I'm going to go full time because I'm just going to build this thing and I'm going to launch it and boom, I'm gone." And it's like, well, wait a minute, because for that, every one of those guys or gals you see that is doing that thing and making it work, there's 1,000 or more that it hasn't. And so part of proven offer is like, can you create something that does it, right? Like, so can you, is your spin and your methodology on how, whatever that thing is that actually something that you are going to do it? Because just because the model works and the strategy works doesn't mean that you're going to be able to do it. Like, that's just the reality of it, right? Like, so I think that's like, you need to prove that, so when we're saying prove offer, like, you need to prove that you have been able to sell
it. It's your offer and, is proven.
Yeah. And to Adam's point of like, you need to be, when he says make money, I was sitting here, I'm like, yeah, make money. I'm like, and profit. Like, you actually have to make enough money to actually pay yourself and to like live, right? Because like, you can make money and be like, oh, I'm making money, but you're paying yourself $2 an hour, which you may be fine with as long as you pay your bills, I guess. But like, you know, got to be aware, but like, you have to prove the offer that you created and that you sold and you marketed to show that you're able to market it and to sell it. Not just that you've seen it done before, I think is.
And Jeff, I love that. I think that that's something that's often overlooked. And I guess I was overlooking it here even as well, because I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs say, you know, I want to do this and I see other people doing it, so I'm going to jump into this. But the reality is, if you don't have the quality and the level of execution that others have, that's going to be a problem. For example, if you have a problem with your hands and your hands shake, you can't hold them steady, but you want to be a hairstylist, there are lots of hairstylists who made a lot of money. But if your hand is constantly shaking and you can't hold it steady, I'm not sure how you're going to make a full-time living as a hairstylist cutting hair when you don't have a steady hand. So it's very important to make sure you actually have the skill and you can prove the offer and you can prove you're able to make money at what you're going to offer in your full-time business.
I'm going to continue in that. I'm going to reference the E-Myth, which has been a long time since I've read it, but essentially
the book, the E-Myth,
and there's like the E-Myth Revisited, whatever. But essentially that is the idea of like, cause you went into like that. I can't remember what you just said that sparked it, but it was the idea of like, well, yeah. But if you have the skill, and just because you have the skill doesn't mean you have the business skill too, right? You might be an incredible hairstylist and you might have like be great at it and people love having you cut your hair because of the way that you approach it and the styles that you bring to them and the trust that they build you. But that doesn't mean that you can start and run and manage and sustain your own hairstylist, your business or your barbershop or whatever, you know, that type of thing. And so the e-myth basically is like that so many businesses fail because they're started by, I think he refers to them as like technicians, meaning people who are technically very skilled at whatever it is that they're doing, right? So picture a plumber who's like just really good at it. Like things just connect, just great at doing work, or electrician or whatever, but they don't actually possess and or find out that they hate the work of the business side of things too, because that's a consideration too. Like the sustainability that Adam's talking about is like, not just Adam. Adam doesn't just have to record videos for courses. He's also got to take care of the sales stuff and write emails and write copy and update the website. And obviously I know he's got to, you have a team
taxes
and stuff too,
but
like taxes and finance and like, right. And selling and stuff. And so it's all of that that you have to take into account of like, can I, one, can I prove and actually do it? And two, can I sustain a life where I have to do that to the level of which I can? Because sometimes if you just love doing that thing, it needs to be a hobby. It needs to be your escape. And like, that's awesome. You need that. It doesn't always need to be this thing. And so I think there's a lot of like layers to the proving the offer and the sustainability, which I feel is like what we keep doing right now. We keep layering on.
That's great. No, that's great. So number three for me is financial runway. You sort of mentioned this too, Jeff, but for me, it's a financial runway. Do you have the means to, number one, support your family while you're ramping up your business? And number two, support your business while you're ramping up your business, because businesses have expenses. The reality is, if you just put up a sign and say that your business is there, nobody's going to come. That's hope marketing. And we did a whole episode on hope marketing earlier this year, and you could probably look up that episode. But the bottom line is, you've got to get the word out. You've got to spend money to make money. And how you've got to have some means to do that. So there's got to be a financial runway. And when you have to look at your projections, you know, when a lot of times when people are projecting to ramp up their business, when they're going from a side hustle to full time, it's very easy to overestimate. I don't know if you've seen this, Jeff, but a lot of times when I'm estimating things, I do a best case and a worst case scenario. And a lot of times, most times, I'm probably closer on the worst case scenario, which is fine because I plan for the worst, hope for the best, and things, you know, things do go a lot slower than we hope. And I see a lot of people be more optimistic than myself. I'm an aim first guy, aim, or, you know, ready, aim. And you know, that's me. Jeff is probably shoot first and what's ready and aim. Like who knows, but I just ready aim so much that I don't get anywhere. And so, that's me, but I don't think that's a lot of people. So I think that's really important to have for that financial runway, is to really look at realistic financial projections. What is realistic? And so that's number three. And the number four, I think, is it's really important when you're considering making a jump, is to have a contingency plan. You know, if this doesn't work in what, 3 months, then I'll get a job. If this doesn't work in 6 months, I'll start looking for a job. Or what is the contingency plan? What if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't have the demand that you thought it would? What are you going to do? And it's a whole lot easier to do this if you're single and don't have people depending on you. But if you're like Jeff and I and have spouses and kids who depend on us every day, it's really important to have that contingency plan and to think it through and before you make that leap. So those are my four main things, Jeff.
Yeah, I love the number three and four ad there. First side note is I'm a just run down range guy, I guess. I just like throw the gun in the air and run, I guess. Maybe that's how it happens.
Those of us who are ready and aiming and never firing.
But I'm hoping Adam is aiming at least one more time. But the other one of the like having a contingency plan, I think this is something I actually was pulling up, like, when did I write about this? I wrote in my newsletter and then also in our community about I saw someone, I can't remember who it was, some influencer that tells you can be rich tomorrow. Talking about burning the boats, like burn all your boats. And I never heard it that way. I'd heard like get rid of all the things. Essentially it's like go all in on your dream, because if you don't have any other option, you'll make it happen. And this comes from stories of the people that did that and it works out. But the problem for me is that we never tell the story of all the other people who burned the bridges and burned the boats and had no backup plan and then just became poor or broke or miserable and depressed and like, or just had a huge setback. And you know what I mean? Like, so I think too often, too many people are like, you got to go all in and you have to have belief. And like, I know we talked about believing in yourself and that's important, but there is, it's, I think it becomes this, we have this fear of like, well, if I have this backup plan, this contingency thing, then I don't really believe in this and I'm not really putting my passion. It's like, no, you're just being smart. We talked about that in the last episode of like talking about the risk you've taken and stuff is a lot of fun, but having calculated risk and taking calculated risk is a lot better, a lot smarter, and it's going to work out. And it's going to allow you to. And when I wrote about this, I talked about like all the different times that like, how many businesses I've started and failed. I don't even know at this point. I'd have to go through them and assess what it is. But like, I've never drowned. I've gotten close, but I've never drowned. I've always had boats to fall back on, other ideas to go to, things that I could go do if this idea didn't work out. Because that's not betting on yourself. That's not believing in your thing. That's being realistic that the reality is you can have the perfect idea, the perfect model, the perfect strategy, the perfect messaging, the perfect location, but the timing's off. You gotta have all those things in a timing, but your messaging's just a little off, or your sales cycle is a little longer than you thought it was going to be, or whatever, right? Or a pandemic strikes, or you know what I mean? Like there's so many things. The AI comes out and disrupts the industry you were just about to go into. Like there are so many other things that can impact it, that having that backup plan, having a contingency plan is not lack of faith in your idea and yourself. It's just a good decision. So that's a big one because I think too many people, and honestly, I think a lot of people tell you that, hey, just go for it because then they want you to buy your course or hire them or whatever, and they want you to be in need. But like, that's why I look at how you did it, Adam. Like you were in a spot where you're like, all right, I can go for this. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to be okay. My kids are going to be okay. Like we're going to be good. Will I be upset? Sure. Right. Like, but we're going to survive. Right. And I think that's such a big one. So I'm glad you went there, cause I wasn't thinking that yet, but that's something I'm super passionate about. And I try to like talk very clearly about that. Like that's dumb advice to burn the boats. It's terrible advice.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
yeah, I don't say burn the boats. Maybe dock them. You know, don't leave them ready. Don't leave them ready to go. But dock them, put them away in storage. You know,
and like you know, maybe take a life raft with yourself so you can get back to the boat. Whatever. You know,
exactly. So
I can't remember who. I don't know if I wrote down who it was that said that. But they, yeah, I don't have it. But they said burn your boats. So that's what the phrasing that this guy used. I think I saw it on like a TikTok or something, and that like pissed me off. So
I remember hearing that before too. You know, it is a good, you know, that is a good philosophy to some degree. I remember, you know, when I had my business, I actually started my business. It was 5.5 years old when I finally went full time and doing really well. But I felt like towards the end though, I literally felt like I had one foot on, you know, a boat and another foot on a boat. And I was kind of doing the splits because I couldn't hold it together and I needed to have all my eggs in one basket. And so it wasn't a matter of burning the boats. It was a matter of not having, you know, my legs in, you know, not having
eggs in multiple baskets. Different. Yeah. Yes. That's different, right? That was you getting the point where like, all right, it's time for me to make the leap from this boat to this boat. Yep. That boat's still there. You could go it's back to it if there. You really had to, right?
Still there. That's right.
And that doesn't mean that you have to go back to like always be ready to go back to your job that you don't like, but like have the contingency plan, I think is super important and so often overlooked.
Yeah. I've seen people, you know, leave. They're like, I'm quit. You know, screw you guys. Well, you not only you are burning your boats and your bridges. And then
you're burning a bridge there, yeah.
Yeah, and you got nothing to go back to. At least if you go on your own, they say, well, that makes sense. Well, when that doesn't work out, come back. And then you've got an open door and a possibility to have that contingency. So, well, very good. This is a great discussion, Jeff. I love this. It's a great discussion. It goes back just a few years for me. I've only been full-time in my business for 2 years now, but it's been a great journey for me, and I know you've done it much longer, but those are some great considerations for those who might be thinking about going full-time in their side hustle.
I love it. Let's wrap it, dude.
All right. Jeff, that's all we have for this episode of the Small Business BS Podcast. For more information on this episode and other episodes, go to smallbusinessbs.com. Until next time, have fun, be strategic, and get out there and grow your business. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Small Business BS Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and share it with fellow entrepreneurs. Until next time, keep thinking big and taking action in your business, one step at a time.